Well, it's great to be here this morning and to have everyone with us. We welcome our visitors. It's a beautiful day here this morning, and I think expected to get up to about 87 today, but we were talking with my sister on the phone in Tampa, and she said it was 116 there, so I think our temperatures are really nice here, and it's great to get together, to be together here on the Lord's Day, on the first day of the week. I'm going to be reading Mark chapter 3, beginning with verse 21. Mark chapter 3, beginning with verse 20, actually, we'll start. Then the multitude came together again, so that they could not so much as eat bread. But when his own family heard about this, they went out to lay hold of him, for they said, "He is out of his mind." And the scribes who came down from Jerusalem said, "He has Beelzebub, and by the ruler of the demons he casts out demons." So he called them to himself and said to them in parables, "How can Satan cast out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan has risen up against himself and is divided, he cannot stand, but has an end. No one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man, and then he will plunder his house. Assuredly, I say to you, all sins will be forgiven the sons of men, and whatever blasphemies they may utter. But he who blasphemes against the Holy Spirit never has forgiveness, but is subject to eternal condemnation, because they said he has an unclean spirit." Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him, and a multitude was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you." But he answered them, saying, "Who is my mother or my brothers?" And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and my mother." Jesus made a very important introduction of a thought here, that we not only have physical families in life that we share much in common, even the DNA, but what is most significant is that we also have a spiritual family, and we have much more in common with, because of an eternal nature, doing and serving the will of God is what we share in common with this family. And there may be some of you here this morning that do not have a great, healthy relationship with your physical family. But I want you to understand that you can have a good, healthy relationship with this spiritual family that Jesus introduces us to here, regardless of what kind of relationship you have with your family in your own life here. We got some photos from Bill and Carol this week. They are on their cruise, and they were in Amsterdam, and Carol was here in a shoe store with all the wooden shoes, and so I texted her and told her I expect to see her next Sunday wearing a pair of these shoes. But then they went on up into Norway, and have been at several ports there. Bill said that it has been cool, about 55, and overcast most of the time, and that on their cruise across the North Sea, they hit a bad storm, and it was very turbulent there, but they arrived safely in Norway, so we want to be praying for Bill and Carol. We wish them the best. And they are on this beautiful cruise there in the North Sea, and they're going from there to Iceland here this week, and then they'll be coming home on Thursday. But as we think about Jesus, we see here from this text, we're reminded of the fact that Jesus had a physical earthly family. And when Jesus came into this life, he came at a time that was very turbulent politically, economically. He did not come into a ideal time or place. And the family that he was born into was not a perfect family. It had many problems in this family, and it was a humble family. I think if some of you were able to, say for example, if you were able to not have your own family, but if you were to just pick any family that you would like to be born into or be a part of, you might pick some wealthy, famous family. But Jesus, when he came into the world, we need to understand that he came in not in some great, wealthy, powerful, important, famous family. He came into a very humble family in a very small corner of Galilee that was considered very insignificant. And yet, as Jesus was here in this life, he continued to pursue the mission of his Father in spite of the imperfections of his own physical family. And so we're going to think this morning about Jesus' family, his relationship that he had with his own family. And we know that he loved them, and yet his family was sometimes not really supportive or understanding of the mission that he had come from. And this presented some challenges for Jesus. So I believe that we can learn, and Jesus can teach us some things about our physical families that we have here in this life, the relationship that we have with them, but then also the relationship that we can have with God's family, and how those things both have an impact on our lives. First thing that I think is good for us to understand about Jesus as we think about his physical earthly family here was that Jesus had some skeletons in the family closet, we could say, because there were parts of their history, of their past lineage, of the family tree of Jesus, that there were some people in there that had done things that were not anything to be proud of. And there is a thinking that many people have that when you have been born into a line of family that has been a certain way of behavior and attitude for a long time, that it almost is inevitable going to be that you're going to turn out to be like that yourself. And sometimes it's difficult to break out of those patterns. When we think about Jesus, and we do sometimes talk about the fact that Jesus, well, he was of the kingly line of Judah. And that was true, that you could trace from Jesus going back to King David. But also it was true that in the family of Jesus, when you go back, even before that, you begin to see that they were very flawed people. And that if you take, for example, Abraham, that in Genesis chapter 12, we see that Abraham went down to Egypt and lied about his wife, saying that she was his sister. And that became a pattern in that family, because Isaac and some of his others seemed to repeat those same types of behavior. When we come over to Genesis chapter 27, you read about Jacob there. And Jacob, he was known as a deceiver. Just like Satan is known as a deceiver, that Jacob had a reputation that he lied to his own father and he lied to other people. When we come to Genesis 38, and it talks about Judah, one of the sons of Jacob, we find that he went into a harlot and conceived a son by her, and her name was Tamar, and she became part of the genealogy of Jesus that is recorded. And you can even follow it down to King David himself. And King David, well, he was an adulterer, and he even murdered the man that he committed adultery with, his wife. And you can look at the genealogy of Jesus all through the Old Testament and see that there is a side of that family that was nothing to be proud of. And yet, this was the family that Jesus had here on this earth. Sometimes, maybe some of you have been to a family reunion, you know, where the whole family comes together. And there sometimes can be people who show up at those family reunions that your kids might say, "Mom, who is that over there?" You know, you would almost want to not even say, "Well, that's my cousin, that's my uncle," you know. But most of us in our families have some skeletons like that. That there are people in all of our families that are not perfect by any means, and none of us are perfect. But here was Jesus, and the thing that we learn from Jesus, I believe, is that you don't have to repeat those same tendencies in your family's past. You can choose a different path for your life. You can choose to serve God. And Jesus, at an early age, he said, "I must be about my Father's business." And so he established the fact early on that he was not going to follow into the same patterns that had been part of that family genealogy. And we can do the same thing. In the book of Joshua, at the end of the book of Joshua, he makes a speech here that is just a great, challenging speech to the people of the nation of Israel. And at the time that he was speaking, he's calling the people here to make a choice in their lives. Here's what he says in Joshua 24 and verse 14. He said, "Now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him with sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you now dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." He was calling the people here to make a choice, because he knew that the people of Israel were very wishy-washy. They were always just living on the border. And he was challenging them towards the end of his life here to make up their mind who they were going to serve. In other words, are you going to continue to be just like your fathers have been in the past? Are you going to be like the people of the land here that you're now living in? Or are you going to make a choice for your life to commit to serving the Lord? And he said, that's what I am doing. And so this was a great moment for the people of Israel. Joshua, in his lifetime, became a great leader. And he's showing us that we can do the same. Do not look at your family's past and think from that I can't change that. I'm going to end up being just like the way my family has been all along. The Bible teaches us here in the book of Ezekiel something very important in Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 14. Ezekiel says, if, however, he begets a son who sees all the sins which his father has done and considers but does not do likewise, who has not eaten on the mountains, nor lifted his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, nor defiled his neighbor's wife, has not oppressed anyone, nor withheld a pledge, nor robbed by violence, but has given his bread to the hungry and covered the naked with clothing, says he shall not die for the iniquity of his father. He shall surely live. Ezekiel is showing us here that the one who chooses the path of sin in their life will bear the punishment for that. But the one who chooses the path of righteousness will not bear the sin of the father, even though the father has lived a life of sin. If the son will choose a life of righteousness, he would not bear the guilt of the father. Each person is responsible for the decisions we make in our own life. So when we look at the life of Jesus here, and the fact that Jesus came from a marred family, but he chose the path of his father, and he was able to escape from that pattern that they had. He was not held down by that, or his influence was not destroyed by that past reputations that were in his family. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 14 and 15, he says, seeing then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but he was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So whatever sins and destructive tendencies there were within the family of Jesus, we know that he chose a different path for his life, and therefore, he was able to continue to faithfully serve God and carry out the great mission that he had come, the redemption of mankind. And I believe that's something that maybe some of us need to think about more in our lives, is what path am I choosing in my life? Am I making the decisions for myself? Or am I simply going through my life and here's the way my family has been doing things for a long time, and I have seen that as a model pattern in my life for so long that is how I'm turning out unless I decide to do something about it. Jesus can teach us there is a better way. There was sin in Jesus' own family, but he chose something different. And some of you I know have come from faithful Christ-centered homes, and that was truly a blessing if that is true. But if that wasn't the case in your life, some of you may not have been raised in that type of a home under that kind of an influence to love and serve God with all of your heart. I want to encourage you all this morning to make a decision for you in your life and your house. As Joshua said, choose the Lord and to serve Him. And God will bless you in that choice that you are making. But you know, Jesus, not only was it true that he did have some people in his past ancestry of his family, but it did not keep him from living a pure life. But also Jesus in his family had to deal with unbelief in his own biological family. The family that shared the DNA with Jesus. That there was unbelief in his own family. Jesus was going out teaching the message of the kingdom that was coming and the good news of the gospel, and yet there were those within his own family that were not supportive of that at this point in time. As we see here in Mark chapter 3, verse 20 and 21, it said that then Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him, for they said, "He is out of his mind." Now, Mark chapter 3 is a sort of a turning point in the Gospel of Mark, because in Mark chapter 3, Jesus does a lot of things that are going against the grain. Things that are, he's introducing things into the way of life of the people of Israel to show them that God's will is going to have to take place above the traditions that they have been following. And he chooses his disciples, his 12 apostles, and he is going to be sending them out. But he's beginning to meet with this opposition where some of them are saying, "Oh, he is of Satan." And so Jesus, in his own family, was finding that there were some of his mother and his brothers that were becoming very concerned about him. And as they were watching Jesus, they were seeing that many crowds of people were surrounding him, and here they could not even eat their food because of this. So they were becoming worried about Jesus. And they said, "He is out of his mind." Well, this shows us that the family of Jesus here, even his brothers and his mother, were questioning what he was doing, the way that he was living, the choices that he was making. They were not really supportive of it. They had seen in Israel in the past people who would rise up and call themselves messiahs. And they knew what was going to be coming if he continued that line of talking that he was saying among the people. And they were beginning to be concerned about him. They wanted to come in and get him out of there and get him back to a safe place. Well, can you imagine that here is the Son of God who has come down to this earth and lived a perfect life, and yet his own family did not believe in him. They didn't believe the things he was saying, the mission he was sending. They didn't believe it was safe, what he was doing. It troubled them, what he was getting himself into, and seeing the rising opposition that it was inviting, they were really concerned and worried about him. A little bit later in John chapter 7, it was the time for the feast here, the Feast of the Tabernacles. John chapter 7. It says, "After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, For he did not want to walk in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand. His brothers therefore said to him, "Depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For even his brothers did not believe in him. So Jesus was continuing to pursue his purpose and his mission. And as time went on, he was coming closer to the fulfillment of time when he knew what was coming, that he was going to be laying down his life for the world. And yet it was not time at this time, the Feast of Tabernacles, though Jesus needed to go down to Jerusalem and attend the feast. And his brothers began to sort of egg him on here, that they are saying, "Why don't you, if you really are who you say you are, why don't you make a public display of yourself? Go out in the open and really put it all out there for people to see. Do it in a more flashy way for the world to know who you are." Well, why were they doing that? It tells us that it was because they did not believe in him. So they were not supportive of Jesus. They were saying, "Come on down here to the Jerusalem, just get out there in the open and show everyone who you're claiming to be." But that isn't the way Jesus was wanting to go about this. Jesus was being very intentional in his ministry. He was following the time that God had in mind for him to make this appearance and to for the hour to come when it was right in the eyes of the Lord. He knew that if he went down to Jerusalem in the way they were saying, the Jews would try to kill him, and it was not the proper time. So here was Jesus pursuing the ministry that God had given to him, and yet here was his own brothers that were challenging him to do it in a way to make a public statement of it. The thing that we learn, though, as we look at Jesus, is that he did not let those things cause him to turn aside from the mission that he was on. He continued faithfully, doing just exactly what he knew the Father wanted him to be doing. He did it in the right way, in the right time. And what we find is that as Jesus kept focused on his mission, the unbelief within his family began to change. And as the story ends in the book of Acts, we find that his family now were becoming believers. Because in Acts chapter 1 and in verse 14, it says, "These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brethren." So, yes, Jesus had some skeletons in the family closet that he had to live with, that background of his family throughout his life. He even had his own brothers and his mother that weren't always supportive of him. And as much as he loved them, Jesus did not let that stop him from the mission that he needed to be on. Jesus did not stop in the middle of his ministry and say, "Oh, my brothers and my mother, they aren't fully behind what I'm doing. I need to put everything on hold here and go home and spend more time with them and make sure that they are okay before I come back out and continue on his ministry." Instead, Jesus continued to stay focused on the ministry that he knew was before him. And as we look at his life, what we can conclude is that what mattered most to Jesus in the long run was not his physical family, but it was his spiritual family. That Jesus wanted to identify himself above all things with those who were his followers, those who were listening to the Word of God and showing the interest and the desire to do God's will. In Mark chapter 3 and verse 31, it says here toward the end of this reading, "Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him. And a multitude was sitting around him, and they said to him, 'Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you.'" Now, they came here to this house where Jesus was inside, surrounded by many people. And it says that there were a crowd of people sitting there around Jesus, listening to him. We know from that these were disciples. They were people that's where a disciple is supposed to be, sitting at the feet of Jesus. And that's true in our lives also. That being the disciples of Jesus, we need to sit at the feet of Jesus and listen to him. But his family is standing on the outside of the house and they can't really get to him. It's so crowded. But someone came to Jesus and told him, said, "Look, your mother and your brothers are outside and they would like to see you and they would like to talk with you." But I think it's interesting the response that Jesus gave here. It says, "But he answered them saying, 'Who is my mother or my brothers?' And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him and said, 'Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and my mother.'" Jesus here, it wasn't that he didn't know who his mother was or his brothers, but he was making an important point here when he says, "Here are my mother and my brothers." Because he's saying, whoever does the will of God, they are my true family. It was at a time here then in Jesus' life when his own family really did not seem to grasp or be in support of what Jesus was doing. Jesus didn't give up on what his purpose was, but what he did say is here very important. These people who are listening to the gospel, these are my real family, those who submit to the will of God. That is the family that Jesus emphasized above everything else in his life. Like I say, there are many people today who do not have a very good relationship with their family. And what this is teaching us, I believe, is that we need to emphasize our spiritual family. We need to look to our spiritual family and find deeper and more meaningful relationships there. Not that we are to ever turn away from our earthly families. That's not the point. But at the same time, our families, our earthly families, they can be very possessive at times. And sometimes they can even turn on us and become very critical of us. You know, you can go out into among other people and occasionally someone might say something that would hurt you directly. But you know, your own families can sometimes be the ones that can really turn and say things to you that dig down and really hurt you the most. And there can be members of your family that, well, why are you always going to church? They want to be controlling of you. They want to be possessive of you. They think they need to come first before anything else. And it's in that situation that Jesus is speaking here, where he's looking at his family standing out there, but he doesn't get up and go out and speak to them. He says, who are my family and my mother and my brothers? It's you guys right here. You are my real true family. You are the ones that I identified with. And so Jesus here is identifying the importance of having your spiritual family and the importance of those relationships that we can have in our life. When we turn over to 1 John chapter 3, Jesus is showing us that we can all be part of this spiritual family and have this deeper, more meaningful relationships that we have with our brothers and sisters in Christ, that it may be even a more meaningful relationship in your life than you have with your own family. In some ways, that can be true. John says in 1 John 3, 1 and 2, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us because it did not know Him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. We need to continue to be focused on that spiritual family, regardless of the relationships that we may have within our own physical family. And I'm talking about brothers and sisters, cousins, grandparents, the extended families that we have. Those relationships in the long run are not going to be as meaningful to us as the relationships that we can have with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And if we stay focused on our purpose of serving the Lord, that may be the key to eventually bringing our families to Christ. That's what happened in Jesus' life. I've seen it happen in a number of instances in my life where there had been a faithful member of that family. Maybe the wife is a faithful Christian. Her husband is not. And for years and years it goes on that way, that she just continues to come and faithfully serve the Lord. But the day comes, long after that began, when her husband does come to the Lord and become a faithful child of God. That's the encouraging thing to me when we think about our families, is that when we put the priority on the spiritual family, we are doing one of the best things we can do to help encourage, because we're setting the standard, we're setting the pattern. We're putting a model in front of our families that they need to see, that we need to be our priority on serving the Lord. The thing that is also encouraging is when we read here in Hebrews 2 and verse 11, what Jesus says. He says, for both He who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all of one, for which reason He is not ashamed to call them brethren. You realize what that is saying to us is that when you are in Christ, Jesus is not ashamed to look at you and say, you are my brother. You are my sister. You are my family. And I'm Maybe you are like me in your life, that you hate feeling left out. Some of you probably can identify, you know what it feels like to be a part of a group where your friends are maybe talking about some subject, and they're all engaged in the conversation, but you don't really know anything about that subject, and so you feel left out. We all want to be a part of the group. We all want to be a part of the family of God. We want to know that we are needed and that we are welcome, that we are cared for. And sometimes the sad reality, and even in the church, is that there are some people who feel left out. They feel unwanted. They feel like they don't belong. They're not welcome, even in the Lord's family. We need to reach out to those people and assure them that when you're part of the Lord's church, you're not going to be left out. You can always find a place here in God's family where you are welcome and loved and cared for. There was a preacher who was telling about a meeting that he was in, out in a smaller congregation, and he was preaching several lessons on a day where they were having a special meeting, and it was coming up on the last lesson of that afternoon. And as he came back to the church building and came in, the secretary, one of the ladies of the church, she met him at the door and she says, "You're going to have to need to really preach one of your best sermons this afternoon." He said, "Why?" He said, "Because we're going to have a visitor." And she said, "There's a lady that called up a while ago and she was asking directions, and she saw one of the announcements of the meeting somewhere out in town, and she wanted to come. And so she said, you really need to preach one of your best sermons here tonight." And so he was standing at the back door and he was waiting, and there was one of the other members that was a door greeter there that was waiting. And sure enough, they see this lady pull up out in the parking lot. And she gets out of the car to come in, and she's not dressed the same way that the people in the congregation. I mean, the people in the congregation, they're all wearing their very best clothes. And she was probably wearing her very best clothes. But as the preacher was standing there, he saw the greeter walked out to meet this lady in the parking lot, and he said, "Young lady, is that the best you have? We wear our best for God." And she got back in her car and left. She was feeling that she wasn't welcome to be a part of that family. What I want us to understand is we don't want to ever have that happen here in this congregation. We don't want people to ever feel that they're unwelcome, that they're uninvited, that they're unimportant. And I hope that each one of you can have a good relationship with your earthly families. I really do. But the thing that Jesus put the greatest emphasis is that when you make the Lord's family your priority, you are going to be fulfilling the purpose that God has in your life, regardless of the way your other family members are living. You serve the Lord, and you can reach other members of your family by that commitment that you establish for yourself. Well, thank you for your attention this morning. We're going to close by singing the invitation song. And if you are here today and you're subject in any way to Jesus calling us to Him, we're going to stand and sing the invitation. We invite you to come.
It won't be very long till the shore marches.
It won't be very long.